Friends and enemies, quick note about the beginning of this episode. For some reason, StreamYard or YouTube had a problem with our audio. It's kind of popcorn-y. Sounds like there's like too much voltage in the mics. So if you are bothered by that, skip to like 6 minutes, 7 minutes, something like that, and it kind of resolves itself. I don't know what the problem was, but anyway, just in case you're wondering at the beginning of the episode what happened to the audio, it does resolve after about 6 or 7 minutes. Enjoy the rip. The Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. Here is always my co-host Len, who must be in a different location than me because once again, more layers than the Ethereum network over there, buddy. What the hell's going on? Don't you think you should be, suns out, guns out like your boy here? What's the problem over there?
It's chilly here. I don't know about over there, but over here it is chilly. So I'm just trying to stay as warm as possible. This is nuts. It gets few days into summer. It's really, really chilly. I mean, in comparison to other summer days, but yeah. How are things over there?
Great, man. Just came back from a hard rip at physio. They're keeping me longer and longer, which is dope. Today we had some sprinting going on in the negative body weight. What do you call it? The Alter G treadmill. So I had 85% or 84% body weight running just a little shy of 9 miles per hour, trying to get some real let out. Cause it's weird when you're like running and thinking about how you're running and you know, when you have like an injury, this is probably the same as when I did my knee. And if you've been hurt, you know, people in the crowd or you guys, like you can kind of think about striking with your heel first on a short step. But if you're out striking way out in front of you, you're going to strike toe first. And that toe first strike is where you really got to make your money coming off of this injury. So it was good. Felt good. Feels good right now. No incline yet. I run incline full body weight at the park near my house every couple of days.
Treadmill, you have to run at least 1 degree incline to simulate the wind. And that's just a very, very like minimal, like 1 degree. You should go a little bit more. That's the recommended.
It's not even in my list of concerns right now. Eventually it will be, but it's not right now.
Yeah, no, just whenever, if ever you get there. But anyways, Joey, look at the chat.
Before we start to chat, I know I was just about to say it's great to see all you guys. Yellow, Chooched, Boomer. Yes, it's a Westbrook jersey. When Westbrook was Apex, Mr. Triple Double. Connor, what's going on? Bleak, what's going on? I'm sure there'll be more of you guys coming in. 15 is what I see. It's usually a little bit behind YouTube, which is dope. Len, confession here before we start. I forgot to change the latency.
So it's going to be a tad delayed. It's going to be like 5 or 6 seconds delayed. So no worries. So if you're typing into us, just keep that in mind. We'll just make do with what we have.
Usually I do it right before we start. But today I had, like I said, I was at physio late, ate late. Anyway, it's all good. Jess, Rod, T, good to see you guys. Len, should we start with the sponsors?
Let's hit it right, as with all shows.
Yeah, it's brought to you by ShakePay, the one and only. They got a bunch of promotions going on right now. Before we get to those, we think personally, easiest way for Canadian to buy and sell, though you should never sell your Bitcoin. What do they got, Len? They got Shaking Sats, which just changed today. They extended the number of days it takes to get to 1,000 sats a day, but you can still get there. And whether you're on day one or day 1,000, they'll still give you something for free as long as you shake. You can use our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, to sign up. You get $30 on your first $100, plus you get the Shaking Sats. You can't beat that. Plus, Len, they got Shake Paid. You can get your entire purchase off your CAD balance comped. I think there's like different tranches. So a certain amount of purchases between 50 and 100, certain amount of purchases between 100 and 150, something like that. So on the website, all the legal mumbo jumbo there. You can go look at it when you have time. We're not going to do it right now. They also got, what else they got, Len? They got the Sats Back card, right? You can spend off your CAD balance and get 2% back on your first 5,000, 1% back after that.
And the squat.
Plus, they have the Shaking Squats now, right? Which is sick. I used my card 3 times today. Very happy about that. But I would say that, you know, if you're in a squat with 5 people, you're probably crushing. You're probably crushing right now because that's 42 sats every time someone in your squad uses the card. So you get 42 sats on every purchase plus whatever the Sats Back was, which is sick. We love them. We hope to try them out. And buddy, I'll pass to you for sponsor number two, our friends over at LEDN.io.
So yeah, so whenever you buy your Bitcoin from Shakepay, what are you going to do with it? Might as well park it on LEDN and earn some interest as a result of having it on there. Use our promo code below to sign up for an account. Dump 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC on their platform for 15 consecutive days, and you'll be rewarded with 10 USDC. As well, if you have a lot of Bitcoin, you don't want to sell it, you want to borrow against it, LEDN's there to help you out. 50% loan to value, you could fill up your car, do whatever it is you need to do with the money that you get that you borrow against your Bitcoin. Also, if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, as you can see, the price is relatively low, it's going to be going up, right? Yes, yes. So V2X, double up your Bitcoin stack. And then once it gets high enough, just pull out, you're good to go. And last thing they have is also the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, industry first. But check their website. It's going to inform you what is their lending rate, their borrowing rate, and interest savings rate. And also for the interest, sorry, the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, I'm not sure if it's available in every jurisdiction. So make sure you take a look because you may want to get it, but it may not be available to where you live. So check out their website for a little bit more information. I use LEDN. Joey uses LEDN. We like LEDN.
Yeah, we do. We do. There's always risk not having your own keys to your own coins, but I think that LEDN's proven themselves to be a really good actor. And actually, we have Mario Gibney coming on the show on Thursday. At six. Yeah. So we're going to be talking to him. Send us your questions. He wants to have some good answers for you guys. So if you got questions, send them in, me or Len, DMs, tweets, whatever. We'll pose them to Mario and make sure he's got some firepower lined up. So I know you guys are saying in the chat, my audio was fucked for a second there, but hopefully it's okay now. We're recording separate audio files for both of us today, which we've not done yet. We're taking advantage of the StreamYard features here, trying to really, really polish up production quality on back end, as well as making sure the stream is good. So with that said, Len, the price of Bitcoin, man, is right now in American dollar, 20,813.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That's not the right number.
20,805. It's close. It's very, very close. Just a few up. And then Canadian dollars is 26,762. So we're still climbing. Long way to go. A couple of things though, Joey. Number one, the ShakePay changes. Now, from what I understand, it's maxing out a 200th day. Now you max out a 365th day of ShakePay funds. Yes. So I just want to thank, we have two people to thank. Jordan, big fan of the show, informed me, and you had somebody
Mello,
else inform you.
Mac Mello also messaged me. Mac Mello, Manic Music. You gotta forgive me for not knowing that handle off by heart, but it's a tongue twister to kind of pull off the top of my head here. But God bless both you guys for letting us know.
Try it out. These are apps built for Android and Apple phones that you can listen to podcasts, and it's a great way to also send sats over if you like the content, but you're not forced to send a sats over. You can just simply use these apps to listen to your podcast. They're built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners, and there's been a massive change in the Fountain app. So there's Fountain and Breeze. Fountain has just had a monumental leap forward in terms of making it even more competitive. As you're listening to shows, podcasts, they're streaming you sats, the listener. So you might as well action it, listen to some shows, and you get some sats sent to your Lightning wallet, which is on the on their app. So might as well do it.
Yeah,
you can get paid for doing it. You get paid for listening to shows. Why not? Podcasting 2.0, Fountain kicks ass.
Value for value, man. It's the future. It's the future. So I'll say one more thing. You guys are saying that both our audio sometimes is clipping a bit. I hope it resolves. I don't hear any problems with your audio, Len. Do you hear any problems with mine?
No, but I'm going to slightly change mine so it's not as loud, maybe. Maybe that's the problem on my side.
Yeah, maybe it needs a limiter or something. There maybe I'll let me open my thing here. This is good good content. This is business on the air. Shure has a great app called Shure Plus Motive, which lets you do a little bit with limiter and other stuff. My limiter's on, so I don't know. It should be okay.
I lowered mine a little bit, so maybe
I turn my gain down a little bit too. So there. Hope that helps. And if not, like, I don't know what to say. See this cat? See this guy jumping all over the goddamn place?
What happened?
The cat's jumping all over the place. He's in a mood today. Anyway, watching. We got a number of good stories here. We got a short A block, and then we're going to rip it with some Canadian and auxiliary news. What do you think? You ready? How do you feel?
Sure. Let's take advantage while we're still active and ready to go. So number one, the May CPI print for Canada has come out, and we had a big jump in the Canadian CPI for the month of May. And the April CPI, if you recall, came in at 6.8%. And May came in at 7.7%. So that's nearly a 1% jump month over month. And that is the highest since 1983. And that was at a time when we had double digits interest rates that were the norm. And right now, obviously, we're very far from that. And the 7.7 that was reported, and keep in mind, these are just the official numbers. Unofficially, it might be much, much higher. But the official number, the 7.7, was even a miss because economists were predicting it was going to be 7.3. And so that's a pretty substantial miss, almost 0.5%. And the fact that we're getting this big jump now, as opposed to other countries like the United States that had their big jump 1-2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, is it a delay in the Putin price hike? Or is this just QE that's causing all this mess? I'm going to leave the question unanswered and leave it up to all of you to figure out what it is. But Stats Canada, they're saying that the higher prices of crude is thanks to the ongoing invasion in Ukraine, along with an increased of demand of travel, which is picking up, and that's the culprit for higher energy costs. We do also have the federal conservatives. They're calling on the federal government to take measures in terms of reducing or slash eliminating some of the taxes that we pay at the pump. Keep in mind, in comparison to the United States, over here in Canada, we pay a hefty price on gas compared to people down south. And this could really drive down the price of fuel significantly. But it comes with a huge minus here, because then the federal government itself would be taking in a lot less revenue for every time you go fill up at the pump. And at the end of the year, they're either going to have to cut programs or borrow more money, or both. And obviously, I'm not sure we're going to be happy with either two, maybe the cutting the programs part, but certainly not borrowing money is people would like to see. So cutting taxes on gas may be good for the short term, in the long run, it may hurt us. That's just my opinion. And as well as the CPI, let's take a look at the economy moving forward. Joey, do you think that we are in a recession in Canada?
I don't see how we're not. I mean, we don't have something like Fed now that does the sort of, you know, instant quarterly GDP projections. But, I don't want to step on your toes too much here because you're in the middle of the story. But I'll just say that the same way I don't believe the measurement of CPI, I also don't subscribe to the government definition of recession because, why would I? So anyway.
And plus, it could be manipulated any which way they want.
Right.
But anyways, 68% of Canadians, which is a large number, 68% believe that we are heading towards a recession, while 17% believe we are already in a recession right now. Those 17%, they have to be Bitcoiners because they know what the fuck is going on. And of course, we're kind of on the precipice of getting into recession. But one thing to note is the GDP for quarter one, 2022, we had a positive GDP growth. So by classical definition, we're probably not going to get there until the fall. But in reality, we probably already are. Our economy is hurting, and we all know that. And also, there was a new survey of 1,506 Canadian adults. They found that of those, nearly 1 in 4, which is essentially 23.6% to be specific, they reported of having invested in or having planned to invest in real estate or gold to combat the effect of inflation. And people are recognizing that hard assets is the way to move forward. And with this high inflation, what is the Bank of Canada going to be doing? Well, there's talks that they're going to be raising rates next month by 75 basis points. And this is going to match what recently was done by the Federal Reserve. And we might be potentially coming to an end for extremely cheap credit. Still, credit will be cheap, especially if you compare it to the early 80s. But that time may be coming to an end. But they will continually raise rates up until a point where it's just too much pain for people to absorb. And they're just going to have to start QE once again to kickstart the economy. But in terms of that's how the Bank of Canada, how they're going to be dealing with things, how is the Canadians going to be responding to this whole thing? Well, 56% of respondents from a Maru public opinion survey said that they have set stricter priorities and reduced their spending in the past month. And this is all due to higher costs. Discretionary income is going to plummet as a result.
Spending, right?
Sorry, but it's cluster. It's going to be segments of the economy is going to be suffering. Travel and tourism, fast foods. I think going to sporting events is going to probably get a really big kick to the nuts next little while. Probably a few other things are going to suffer too, but these are the ones that immediately come to mind. And I don't have any stats to prove this, Joey, but it's my belief that, at least I don't have any recent stats, the wages in Canada have not been keeping up with the price of inflation. We've been hearing this for all along, but I don't have any recent stats to prove it. So I'm going to assume that it's still the case that the price, the wages are still kind of falling behind. And I know I'm going to make a statement here. This is for the U.S. economy, but there was a recent study that shows that U.S. consumption, it's been lately, has been largely carried by credit card spending and burning of their savings. And this is something I suspect may be true in Canada. And if it is, it's not sustainable because eventually you're going to run out of savings or you're going to run out of getting more credit. And that's going to be something that's going to be really problematic. It's kind of like a ticking time bomb, if you ask me. And I want to also give kudos to the Big Bang on Twitter. He provided both you and I, Joey, some information about how there's a chart of the different bond durations and how essentially the prices are all converging now to a certain point.
So that means you're no longer being compensated for duration risk, basically. Yeah, it's completely broken.
So I don't know what's going to happen from this. Maybe a Japanese style yield curve control. Like, I really don't know. This is very much beyond my mentality here, like an ability to grasp this, but there seems to be something, as you mentioned, it's broken and something's going to give, and ultimately we are going to be the ones that suffer. And we got to do something about this, Joey. Can we put the economy on a blockchain? Maybe we could issue a shitcoin and try selling those shitcoins.
Why don't we just pump the tax receipts into BlockFi? They raised their rates last month, right?
Quite a bit too. So let's do that. Yeah, fuck the blockchain. Let's use BlockFi. And plus, you know, maybe it'll help pump them too because they're in the brink of insolvency. But also, we could also think of other ways too. Like, we could probably mint NFTs. Joey, what about some 8-bit pictures of Bored Apes doing something productive? Maybe that could keep the economy up. Or there's also other ways. Like, I don't know, man. It's fucking nuts. Ultimately, we all just have to like grin and bear it. This is going to be something we're just going to have to fucking just take it with it. There's going to be a lot of pain and suffering coming on. I'm not going to fucking just say no. Like, I'm going to give in and it's going to Decentraland or whatever. That's fucking bullshit.
Boomer in the chat, Lens, suggesting maybe Sam Bankman-Fried can bail us out. Can he buy the country? What's the ticket price?
I don't think he's got enough, unfortunately. The mess we have here, it's so fucking much. No one company or person will be able to do it. Ultimately, in the end, it's on an individual level. I'm going to continually try to buy Bitcoin. And that's shorting the Canadian dollar. That is shorting the current financial system. I don't want them to fail, but the fact that I could see the writing on the wall, I see it is going to fail. So I'm trying to do everything I can to protect myself moving forward. And I think it's Bitcoin. I don't know. I don't know about you, Joey, but Bitcoin seems to be the one thing that I could buy into, and it may protect me moving forward.
It's got a very significant role to play. I think you're right. There's a lot to unpack here. In the interest of not rehashing, no pun intended there, some of the things that we talked about last week with the American print, I'll try and keep this short and Canadian focused. Inflation, Len, is torching people, man. Great timing on a podcast that Peter McCormick just did with Avik Roy on the disproportionate effect that inflation has on different economic classes, how it really crushes people who are in the sort of wagey crowd, right? If you're just a working class guy with no home or no stock portfolio or no way to build equity in an inflationary environment, you're really feeling this pinch in a way that, you know, maybe you and I aren't, or some people who have a home or investment portfolio, whatever, aren't. It stinks because it's like this cruel, cruel trick of timing where, as the stock market now has retreated to, you know, sort of pre-pandemic levels on a lot of the growth stocks you'd like to have some money in, right? Stuff like Amazon, a few others, for example, are, you know, at 2020 levels, or at least significantly drawn back as far as like, you know, PE ratio. At the same time, this is happening and those stocks become affordable. You've now found yourself in a place where you don't have the money to invest in those companies. It's just this cruel timing issue that is facilitated by economic malfeasance and fiscal irresponsibility by first world governments. And it's not just ours. They're all over the place. Central banks all over the place. The other thing I think that's a problem as far as the inflation number, it's the rate of change, right? The rate of change is what's going to startle a lot of people. And I'll give you an example of this. BNN and rates.ca did a survey a little while ago of Canadians who either own a home or were planning to get a mortgage. What percentage of those people do you think answered that they were unclear on what rising rates meant for them? As in, didn't understand what rising rates would do to their monthly balance sheet. What percentage of people do you think answered that?
I'll say it was somewhere between 25 and 50%. So
30%. It's 30%. Yeah. So one in every three people who either has a mortgage or is thinking about getting one doesn't know what rates do. They don't know. They don't know if rates make their payment go up, make their payment go down. And so when you start to see these prints and the corresponding rate hikes, like we did 75 bips or 750, yeah, 75 bips last month. I understand we're doing 100 or 75 again coming up at the next meeting. So, you know, that rate of change is pretty significant, especially for people who don't have a lot of money down on their house. We talked about this before, that every percentage point increase, or every quarter point, I should say, increase on $100,000 in mortgage is about $12 a month. So if you got $500,000 in mortgage, you pay that $12 four times on a one hike raise times the number of 100K outstanding dollars you have, right? So a significant amount of money for people who are in a position that they couldn't put a lot of money down in their home, for example. Maybe they don't have great jobs. Their wages are not keeping up with inflation, like you mentioned. It's very, very difficult times for a lot of these people. Now, worse, Len, I know we don't really give a lot of credit to modern economists on this show, but Bank of Montreal is calling for an 8-handle CPI print next month. So if they get, you know, it's almost inevitable that we get an 8-handle. I know that the U.S. is claiming that they peaked. I think they've done some hedonic adjusting. We talked a bit about that, and they still continue to use homeowners equivalent rent instead of the index we discussed last week that Double Line had in their slideshow. I think we're doing something similar. I would also say that, you know, we haven't done the same amount of fiscal aid that the U.S. has, which we're about to start, it sounds like. Minister Freeland was on TV last week, I believe, talking about spending another $10 billion or so to solve some of these problems, increasing the number of dollars handed out to families. It's interesting that Boomer's saying I'd listen to Money Talks. Yeah, I did listen to Money Talks, heard that survey. Money Talks is a great podcast, highly recommend. So, BMO has this thing where they're talking about an 8-handle. And all this other stuff is going on. We haven't started really stimulating the way that the U.S. did, right? So that's a problem. I'd also say that it's clear that, like our American neighbors, we're about to hike and continue hiking into an economic slowdown. The same economic slowdown you talked about in your sort of review of the news there. This has never happened before. We never do this. And this is like very, very dangerous stuff. I'll hit you with another stat here, Len, that I can't remember where I heard this now. Maybe Spaces today I heard this, or on Twitter somewhere. For the first time in the consumer sentiment survey that the University of Michigan does, the highest earners have a lower outlook, medium-term outlook on the economy than the lowest earners. Wow. So the people with the most money and the most sort of skin in the game understand what's coming. They all see it. And to me, that's a very, very alarming stat.
We also had a record low for that. It was
50. Yeah, it was 50 and change. That's right. Yeah. Last month, right? And so
it came up again for right now. I just got the information. Yeah. Okay. It's 50. That's the record low. It's 50.0. Yeah,
crazy so it's low. It's crazy low. Lower. So, you know, if I got to try and tie this all together and tie it to Bitcoin, I'd say, look, right now you're seeing Bitcoin perform sort of alongside the NASDAQ and alongside risk. We've seen this before. This is not a new game that Bitcoin plays. It trades like a risk asset. It trades like leveraged NASDAQ. All these things are true. What I would say is that there is a growing number of people, evidenced by the unwillingness to buy homes or the lack of ability to buy homes, people whose wages are not keeping up with inflation, people who find themselves unable to pay for gas at the pump, people who find themselves unable to buy their groceries at the same clip they did a month ago, 2 months ago, 6 months ago. This this group is your growing Bitcoin demographic. And there's no other demographic growing faster than this. There's not a growing demographic for gold. I doubt very much there's a growing demographic for equities. I doubt very, very much that even if they wanted to, there'd be a growing demographic for homes at the moment either. And so you have all these things lining up to kind of give you a nice, consistent, thick funnel into Bitcoin. And this is why, you know, during times like these, I don't get me wrong, I still think about the price from time to time, but you're never going to catch me panicking on a dip like this when everything else around you is burning too. It's we are not the only house on the street that's on fire. You know what I mean? Although the fiat maxis will be, you know, quick to dance on your grave on Twitter, all while the Undertaker is digging their trench as well. And so I say, don't worry about it. I say, count on the things you know to be true. This is the best money in the world. It's the hardest asset in the world. The demand and supply force inelasticity in a way that benefits hodlers. And it's clear to me that governments are starting to panic. We talked about this before. We're closer every day to a complete erosion of trust in government institutions. We've seen it, I think, in a number of different fields that we won't talk about on the show, but we will say here that I think finance is next in line, right? The Grim Reaper meme, finance is the next door that guy's knocking on. And I think we're really, really close, especially if energy costs continue to spiral, Len. You just can't hide these things in hedonics. If the price of gas is, or if the price of petrol is 150 a liter, you know, if West Texas Intermediate is 150 a barrel, you can't hide these things. It's impossible. This is going to drive people to Bitcoin. That's the thesis I think you got to think about.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Let's move on, Joy. There's lots more to talk about today. And it was a very interesting speech that came out this past week from Vladimir Putin, everybody's favorite enemy. And this is just a very compelling speech. I'd recommend people to read it, the translated version, because it was an eye-opener. But before the speech even came out, there was a slight delay. And it was the reason that Russian servers were subjected to a cyber attack. And this was just prior to this speech being delivered. I found this to be kind of funny, and I don't know why. I had a chuckle when I saw this. It was a distributed denial of service attack, and this is the one that's very effective at taking down servers. But eventually the speech came about, and he talked about it. And really it was just an attack on the Western powers and how they obtained their power. We can say they or we, whatever, and how the power has been maintained. And this is all since the Second World War. And Putin went on and he was talking about how the rest of the world that's outside of the Western world, so everybody else, they're considered to be second-rate citizens, and ultimately they'll be serving the West. And I just have to point out that, you know, there are sanctions out on there for Russia, I understand. And I'm not trying to say that the recently imposed sanctions, they're wrong, or I'm not trying to defend him or fight for them. I understand that they're there. And they're a tool. They're a very, very powerful tool that Western nations tend to impose on the rest of the world. And they do so, at least in my eyes, it was seemingly with very little regard of the consequences. And Putin goes on to explain that the invasion of the Ukraine was a forced move on him. Now, again, this is something that's beyond me. I'm not too well-versed in the politics in that region, so I'm not going to pass any judgment here if it's something that's good or bad. He did it, whatever. I have no say in this. It's very sad that there's loss of life over in that neck of the woods. But one thing is for certain is this is a prolonged invasion. I would have never expected this to last so long. Initially, I thought they would have gobbled up the Ukraine within a matter of days or weeks. But it just goes to show you that I know absolutely nothing. And Ukraine has a lot of fighting spirit as well. Or the Russians are incompetent, or maybe a combination of the two. But another thing I was wrong about it is the celebrities that are going there and leaders from Western governments going over there to meet with the leaders of Ukraine. And I'm telling you, Joey,
Are you talking about Gaylord Focker?
Yes, he may be one of them. Yes. I'm telling you, those things were not on my bingo card. I would never have guessed that during wartime, but whatever. Let's go back to the speech. He was talking about that the money note, the money supply in the United States is a problem. He was really, really talking about this. And I'm going to quote this straight from his speech. Well, translated, of course. I have already cited this figure. Over the past 2 years, the money supply in the United States has grown by more than 38%. The EU's money supply has also increased dramatically over this period. It grew by about 20% or 2.5 trillion euros. So they printed more money. And then what? Where did all the money go? It was obviously used to pay for goods and services outside Western countries. This is where the newly printed money flowed. They literally gave, so they began to clean out, to wipe out global markets. While at the end of 2019, imports of goods to the United States amounted to $250 billion a month, by now it has grown to $350 billion. It is noteworthy that the growth was 40%, exactly in proportion to the unsecured money supply printed in recent years. Since America's role has changed drastically, it has now turned into a net exporter. Sorry, it's turned from a net exporter of food into a net importer. And that's massive to do that. And he's saying, loosely speaking, it is a money, it is money printing and pulling commodity flows in a way, buying food products all over the world. He has lambasted the West. And it's interesting that he's correctly pointing out the root of the problem, which is the money printing is causing the rising price, which is, I don't know. It's funny you're getting this from a dictator and a potential war criminal that's really coming to the correct conclusion here. And everybody else, in my eyes, it looks like they're trying to blame something else or someone else, including some, maybe even blaming the potential war criminals, the war criminal as the root of all the higher prices that we're experiencing. But I will say this, Putin, in my opinion, he correctly assessed the problems we have here, but he also may have his back against a wall because the sanctions, they're taking their toll on the Russian population, and there's probably going to be more sanctions to come. In fact, they just imposed a new sanction where they're going to be banning in the G7 nations the importing of Russian gold, which is, in my eyes, pretty dumb because once you melt the gold into the other gold, it gets lost in the sauce and you can never find out what exactly is Russian gold versus non-Russian gold. But that's my own comment. But something that's really interesting out of all this too, the Russian ruble has gone up since against the US dollars, has gone up since the beginning of this invasion. So clearly sanctions work in some respects, but it doesn't work for others. But I don't want to talk about sanctions. I want to talk more about the speech here. It's absolutely incredible that he, Vladimir Putin, this potential war criminal, and this guy's like the guy we throw darts on board. We put his picture, we throw darts. But he correctly identified what is the problem here. It's the money printing. This is it. If we could solve this, which we never will, that would have solved all the problems we experience today in terms of higher prices. This speech is incredible. I urge everybody out there, take a listen to it, or at least read the translated version, because it is incredible. It is the truth. And I just ask everybody to read it. It's mind-blowing stuff. What are your thoughts, Joey?
I think you said a few things there that I had written down as well. One is that the ruble is up against the USD, not just up, though, since the sanctions. It's the best performing asset of the year against the US dollar as far as FX. So make of that what you will. I don't know enough about geopolitics, military strategy, things of this nature to comment any more than you did. You and me can kind of sit here and spitball, which we have been known to do, my friend. But on this topic, I think we may just be a little out of our element here. I'll just note a couple of things, okay? When you talk about the difference between political leadership in America and the whole G7, I would argue, and a place like Russia, here's what you see, okay? In Russia, a guy like Putin has to come up through the ranks where, you know, in an environment where making a mistake doesn't mean that you just live in a minister's chair for the rest of your career. It means you die and get buried in a field. It means they kill your family. It means your offspring are never to be heard from again and exiled. You know, that's the most generous way for the story to end. Compare that to the US, where if you graduate from an Ivy League school and have the right last name, you basically get to come up in a period of unprecedented fake prosperity thanks to the reserve status of the US dollar and the military dominance they've enjoyed. You know, many people I think nowadays would say that they've enjoyed behind sort of a Wizard of Oz style curtain. It seems to me like there's a lot of cards turning over that weren't quite the ace that America would have had you believe a year ago. So I look at this and I see Putin, you know, whether or not I agree with his IR strategies, I think that what you see there is a guy who knows exactly how to act. He knows exactly where the weaknesses are, where the bodies are, and he pulls no punches when he discusses his assessment of the current state of affairs. I think he's absolutely correct. I think a lot of people believe he's absolutely correct. I believe the White House thinks he's absolutely correct as well. Biden and the G7, in the meantime, are caught with their pants down. They are enacting energy policies that focus on two-year election cycles and pleasing the least informed, loudest, most irrationally confident group of voters that I think probably the modern world has ever seen. They have the opposite of the intended consequence. It's not just here. It's also abroad. I also think that these policies would be easier to push down the throat of a population. They've been doing these sorts of ESG renewables thing in the US and Canada and, you know, a lot of the other first world economies in Europe for a long time. The problem is now the question, as Peter Ducey at the White House correspondence, press row there would say, that the problem now is that the conversation at the White House seems to have evolved into a dichotomy between whether or not you can afford to pay $10 a gallon for gas or whether or not you can afford to buy an electric car. There is no other options for the average American, which is insane. And to my point earlier about the speed of the change, the rate of change in the situation, that's what causes unrest. When the water boils quickly, it causes problems. Let's talk a bit about the economic situation. I think these things are beyond dispute, whether or not we know a lot about military strategy or the impact of sanctions and other economic blockades, we'll call them. These things are, I think, without doubt. Okay, the amount of dollar, the amount of unfunded liabilities in dollar terms around the world is as high as it's ever been, and probably accelerating faster than it ever has before. There are developing nations who want the U.S. dollar, of course, but none of them want it as much as they did a year ago. There are dangers to foreign reserves for every nation now because of the Russia action, not just Russia. Soon you will see problems with countries who refuse to play this game with Russian oil. Hungary today was among the countries discussing just basically outright refusing to do any of this sanction stuff because they just don't care. Germany is going to bend the knee in the wintertime. Inflation's at an all-time high. There's no visible way to slow it down in the medium term. Shorter medium term. Energy commodities have become the most valuable thing on the planet basically overnight. And maybe most importantly, every Western civilization's voting blocks, the electorate in all those countries are realizing it. That's probably the most important thing, that the masses understand, and no matter how well off, not so well off, rich, poor, stupid, smart you are, you're starting to see things you haven't seen before and you were promised wouldn't happen if you made all the right choices. And yet here they are. They're right in your face. The thread itself is worth reading. We'll link it. If I remember, I'll link it in the show notes or maybe one of us will post it in the chat here, but it's very strong. I would just add one more thing here on the gold front, Len. You're absolutely right. Fungibility in gold, it doesn't allow for this kind of thing. There's certain like protected chains of custody that will ensure that you have a certain bar. And I'm sure there's some serialization of those bars somewhere at these banks that hold them. But this is an impossible ask because these banks are crooked. And if people want to get rid of that gold, they're going to get rid of it. Just one more thing here before I let you go back to the news. Do you think Vladimir Putin needs a cue card to tell him when to sit down, when to stand up, who to say hello to, and when to leave the room when he does a press conference? Or do you think that he's truly a more capable leader than Biden is in every sense of the word?
I think he has those cue cards, but he gives it out to the people that are sitting with him and are attending with him. And he tells them when to sit down, when to stand up, and when to leave.
He writes them.
Yeah, so it's not that they're telling him. He tells everybody else.
This is like the most overmatched I think I've ever seen in the United States. They're overmatched at every turn. The people they have in charge are unserious people, deeply unserious. Kamala Harris talking about Roe v. Wade the other day, she is just unbelievably vacant. Every word is just nebulous garbage. None of it is prepared. None of it is rehearsed. None of it is researched. These people don't understand the situation they find themselves in. Like I said, they are the product of an unprecedented peacetime stretch, all driven by phony money and phony economics, and it's over now. And the tide's coming out, man. The tide's coming out. We're going to see who's got a bathing suit on. I bet you Vlad's got one. I bet you there's a few other world leaders who have one, but I doubt very much that Biden's got any trunks on. So let's see what happens.
I don't know if it's totally peaceful right now. Think about what happened in Afghanistan. They just picked up and left behind.
No, but like, but I'm saying like that these guys are like, they're peacetime people, right? Like they've never had to deal with a real crisis, a real issue where, you know, like we said, where like most of the people in the country understand something is wrong. There's going to be a landslide in the midterms in a few months. It's going to be among the worst losses in modern democratic history anywhere in the world. I can guarantee you that. Then you got countries where, like I said, these guys didn't come up through Ivy League schools. They came up through truly Machiavellian like situations where you would be, you know, you'd have limbs severed if you were caught trying to rise through the ranks the wrong way. These guys are not just sharp. They're as sharp gets, because their lives depended on it then and depend on it now. It's not the case in the States. And you're seeing the difference in the quality of output at the top of the food chain. There's no doubt about it now.
I don't know if that's the reason why, just because of their upbringing and everything else. I don't know what to pin it on, but they're sharks. They are absolute sharks in the water. And you don't want to mess with them. You don't want to even do business with them on a good level, because any point in time, they could turn their back on you and say, fuck you, and you're done. And you'll never be seen again. And your family will never be seen again. But I want to go back to, what about Carter? He must have been as inept as anybody else. In the late 70s with the Iranian hostage situation, it looked pretty bad. That's what kind of made Ronald Reagan get elected the president at that time. I mean, it was a one-term president, like Donald Trump. You don't tend to, and George Bush, I forget which, is it W or H? I forget which one it is, the elderly.
HW is in the 90s.
So those are the only three in my lifetime that have, they're only one termers. And that says something about each of them, because generally you have such a huge advantage if you're the incumbent, and to not get reelected, that's sad. And so Carter is one of them. But that's it, Joey. That's it for the A block. Let's transition to the Canadian news. And the first thing I have here is the Canadian Securities Regulator, the OSC. They've banned KuCoin, and they also reached a settlement with Bybit. And so KuCoin has been banned for violating security regulations. And on top of that being banned, they also have to pay a fee of 1.54. This is a fine for failing to comply with OSC demands. They never, and this is the quote, maintained an open dialogue, provided requested information, and committed to engaging in registration discussions, end quote. Very interesting stuff. So KuCoin, they're screwed. They're banned. Not only that, $1.54 million has to be paid up. Bybit is not out of the clear here, though. They have stopped, or they've agreed to stop accepting new accounts for Ontario residents. So I'm assuming then existing accounts could still use their system. And they also agreed not to release any new products or engage in marketing or promotional activities. What this shows me is the OSC means business when it comes to security-related stuff that is being offered by a lot of these exchanges. So I suspect regulators moving forward, they're going to be encroaching on a lot of these things, which are securities. They're going to identify them as securities, and they're going to drop the hammer on them. So keep your eyes peeled. It's going to be fun times moving forward.
I'd be careful buying anything on any exchange that wasn't Bitcoin. Now, I think that the target, like the laser, is really on crypto and all these like half in, half out tokens, as far as like security and whether or not the exchanges are doing the things they should be doing. I honestly can't think of a situation where if I was a shitcoiner, I would be willing to take a chance having significant sums of money tied up in a trading account for any length of time at the moment. I can't do it now. I could have before the profit maybe was available and things were kind of ripping, right? But at the moment, I just think it's not a good idea.
Could get rugged at any time. Yeah. So let's move on. KPMG, do you remember a few weeks? No, it was probably months now that they've announced that they added Bitcoin and Ethereum to their balance sheet. Do you remember that story?
I do. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so that was, I guess, a good thing and a bad thing. Adding BTC was good. Adding ETH was, what the hell's going on with them? But they're saying that now they have skin in the game. And they now hold digital assets, and they say this is the first step before moving forward and moving deeper into, quote, the crypto space. They have a crypto team at KPMG, and they're seeing a lot of momentum around the tokenization of assets in the real estate market and beyond, but it was also considering the potential growth of non-fungible tokens and the metaverse. I cannot believe these words coming from KPMG, very large company, very respected company, now talking about metaverse, tokenizing real estate, NFTs. Man, this is a shake my head moment all the way through. It's fucking nuts.
I don't understand. I did see this story, and I was able to, it's interesting because, you know, you and I don't share stories. I was able to actually pull a photo of the team. So I don't know. This is the crypto team over at KPMG. I'm not sure I would be putting a lot of faith in these guys as far as consulting, managing assets, balance sheet, things of that nature. But great costumes anyway.
The wizard on the right.
Is this like a Gell-Mann thing for you? Do you know what Gell-Mann is? Like you read the paper and it's about something you really know well, and you're like, everything here is wrong. And you turn the page and it's something you don't know well, and you just assume that it's correct because it's in the newspaper. I feel like this is happening to me all the time now. Like KPMG is a big four accounting firm. TJM in the chat has some professional affiliation with consulting. I don't want to say he works for KPMG because I don't think he does, but I think he's got some professional affiliation with consulting. I would be curious to hear what he thinks. And if anyone else has any ideas, I'm interested in hearing them. I look at this and I think KPMG can't figure this out. How do I know they figured anything else out either? Like this can't be,
it's, you know, tarnishing, I mean? Their image.
Does this not bother you? It should bother people, but.
Well, if I have an option to choose them or somebody else to do anything with my finances, I'm going with the somebody else. Unfortunately, KPMG, they just shit the bed here because they lost all credibility by talking about tokenization of real estate. What a fucking joke. And talking about real estate, Joey.
Didn't they also buy like some World of Women NFT, or was that another company?
I think it was them. Connor noted here on the chat, he said that they
exactly. That's a disaster, man. Absolute Connor, great snipe. That's a disaster. It is a disaster.
I'd love to know who was the person or people that made this decision.
And it's worth nothing.
Shitty investment. Well, an investment, right? What the hell are you going to do with it anyways? We're talking about real estate now in Canada. There's the CMHC, they're warning that Canada needs 5.8 million new homes by 2030 to tackle the affordability crisis. They're saying that there's a majority of supply gap that is found mostly in Ontario and British Columbia. If the current rates of new constructions continue, CMHC says that the country's housing stock is expected to increase by 2.3 million units by 2030. Reaching close to 19 million units in total. But in order to achieve affordability for all Canadians, the agency says an additional 3.5 million homes are going to be needed to be built, which is absolutely incredible. So I have a couple more things I want to talk about, but I just want to pass it off to you. The affordability issue about homes, the price of homes isn't going up. The price of the Canadian dollar is going down. It's being debased. It has less value. It could buy less stuff. So the fact that they want to build more homes, it makes me wonder, and the CMHC is saying we have to build a ton more homes. I'm wondering if the government itself is going to get into doing more like affordable homes, like building more homes for people to get into, because this might be something that they may want to do, because the cost of homes, it is very expensive, obviously. How are people going to live in a home? Well, you'd have to rent. Buying it is not an option for a heck of a lot of people. But if they could somehow create a bunch of supply for the population to buy into, that new supply would have to be created by, I'm assuming, the government. I want to hear your thoughts on that, Joey, because I think that this is something that maybe something we may be hearing as a election thing, as an election platform moving forward. What do you think?
I think we probably will. I'm on Ben Rabideau's Twitter right now. Highly recommend following him for Canadian housing stuff. Ben, Rabideaux. And he had a stat related to this not long ago, and I was trying to find it, but I'm not gonna be able to now. Len, like there's there's no way that we can make this work, right? Am I dreaming this? Like, is there any way that this is going to balance itself out with the natural sort of home starts? Don't forget, commodity prices are through the roof, right? Transport for those commodities is getting higher and higher. Stress testing for new homes is getting more difficult. Ben actually had a tweet today or yesterday that said there's going to be new guidance, which I understand is effectively a new rule related to HELOC and mortgage related loans. And so how are we going to fix this? What's the plan? This is another thing that there's no plan for. It's another thing there's no plan for, basically.
If you leave it to itself and still continually create a lot more money supply, it's definitely not going to help. It's not going to be something that can be solved. But if the government wants to get into the home building business, which they kind of do in a way, like they do build some affordable homes right now.
Was this part of Freeland's thing the other day? Sorry to interrupt you there.
The
government's thinking about taking, or was that some other first world government talking about taking a 5 or 10% stake in new home purchases to support home buyers? I thought that was her.
Well, this has been in the last little while. That's the first time home buyers initiative, something like that. And the government of Canada has a 5 to 10% stake in potentially of new homes. But I totally forgot about this, but this is something that they've been doing for at least a couple of years now. And the theory behind that is that they would be able to reduce the price of the homes by 5 to 10%, but in reality, it's not going to be the case.
Can't.
But they're taking a stake in the home too. Now, as the price of homes go up, that's great. But if the price of homes go down, then we're left holding the bags. So I know that they're trying to put a kibosh to that. Not really put a kibosh, but at least limit the amount of losses or potential losses as part of that program. But I don't know. But the $8.9 billion that they mentioned last week had nothing to do with home ownership or They did give $500 for people that are renting to make it easier for them to make ends meet. So it was just a one-time.
By the way, is that not like what $500? That's what the number is. Like, come on.
I'm not justifying if it's higher or lower. I'm just stating what it is. It's in my personal opinion, it's not going to take anybody very far. $500 will be eaten away within 1 or 2 months and that's it. Then what happens at that point? They're stuck back to square one and they've got to get another
500. See what happens.
Yeah. Maybe it's going to change things.
And then maybe in 500 more every month. What do you think? Is there a name for that?
I don't know. Maybe there is. We've been talking about this for quite some time.
I think about these things and there has to be, I'm going to really try and choose my words carefully here. There has to be someone at these meetings that must be saying, there has to be a slide or a footnote on a slide that says giving away money, whether through programs that control price or through free stimulus or through monthly payments or through energy rebates. These are all inflationary tactics. There's got to be a footnote on a slide, right? Someone's got to be saying it, right? Please tell me someone's got to be saying it. Please tell me someone's saying it.
I can't say. I'm not privy to any of these meetings. I never attended them. I don't even know who's a part of it. So I have no idea. And I hope so. But what do I know? I'm just some pleb over here in front of a wall with a few hats and a block clock. So what the heck do I really know? But there's a troubling stat that also I want to bring up, Joey. Canadians are permanently leaving Canada at an unusually high rate. And this is for the first quarter of 2022. And it's not a big number, but still, you have to take this in context. About 13,100 people left Canada in Q1 of 2022. And that's up 42%. From the same quarter last year. And Q1 typically is a very slow quarter. So this is the biggest first quarter since 2017. And this is really interesting that you have to take into context. And the provinces that had the most emigration, people leaving the provinces, was Ontario and BC and Alberta. And these are provinces that are known for highly skilled labor and pricey real estate. So I'm saying this now, like the story in conjunction to the last one, there's a need for more homes, but there seems to be an uptick of people leaving Canada. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any correlation with that, if people are just selling their stock and moving to another country, or maybe they're keeping it and renting it and moving to another country. But still, it's kind of troubling to see that there's more people leaving, albeit it's a small number, but they're leaving Canada, and yeah, it's not looking good in certain respects.
We've had this conversation before about the sort of mechanisms that immigration tries to put a thumb on. There's no easy fix for this. Because the other thing too, like when you talk about where we're losing people, we're losing, again, like this is anecdotal, we're losing good people. Good people don't want to stay. They think there's better opportunities other places. We have such a widely expanded social welfare state that oftentimes people who are most reliant on programming like that, they're never going to leave. And then what do we end up with? We really shift the tail of the sort of quality of person that's in the workforce, for example. And, you know, those demographic bombs, you know, I know they can be touchy subjects, but we really got to start thinking about this stuff and having honest conversations about it, because once you get to a certain tipping point, you know, like what are you going to do to fix it? We're not the reserve currency, by the way. We're very much the little brother in the room, and have to consider that when we think about whether or not we can print and stimulate our way out of this. So these are, you know, the conversations are going to happen at some point, Len. The question is, do we have the testicular fortitude to have those conversations before they become irreversible problems, or do we start having them sooner? My hope is that we do it sooner, but nothing would surprise me if we waited until the whole place was on fire.
Well, piggybacking off of that, did you see the statistic in Canada that birth rates are down? And that's something that's also concerning, because how are you going to be able to support a population that's obviously that's aging by the day, when you're having less and less children? And typically it is going to be the gap filled with immigration numbers. So you're going to have to bring in more immigrants to do jobs, to pay taxes and support the elderly population.
Here's a chart for you for natural increase in Canadian population quarter over quarter from 1980 to now. It's down about 80%-ish.
Yeah. And I think I saw that the number is we passed a tipping point of meeting the demand, like in terms of the population, if you let it go on its own, will go down over time.
Right. So the birth rate, you mean, right?
Yeah. It won't replace the people that fast enough, the people that are, whatever. I'm not going to get into it. But China's having the same problem right now. And yeah, this is another thing we have to, has to be addressed. What caused this? You have to figure it out. I'm not going to get into that, but certainly something is causing it, and I don't know what the heck it is. At least I have no expert.
We talked about this, right? Like, if you look at, there's like a couple of really difficult to fudge stats that will tell you whether or not you have a healthy economy. One is housing starts. The other is birth rate. Like, oh my God, we're going to get into like biological imperatives here a little bit, but like people want to have kids, generally speaking, right? They want to find a partner, have a kid, let's say, you know, more often than not, should be able to sustain a birth rate in a first world country where economic conditions are favorable and there's, you know, significant incentive for you to bring a newborn into the world and raise them. And, you know, you benefit from that in the back end because they'll support you as you age out and pass away. Like these things are like, truly not just at the core of like functioning society, but at the core of what it means to be a human. And we're not doing it. The money's so fucking broken that we've gotten away from biological imperatives at such a ridiculous rate. We're jeopardizing sustaining a population. It's ridiculous, man. If this doesn't tell you that something is wrong, nothing is going to tell you that. You're so stuffed full of the wrong ideas that there's no saving you now. It's just the way it is. It's unbelievable that people don't see the problem here.
And you can't even say it. Chuck said it perfectly well. I can't repeat it, but he's bang on in that. And Rox was saying, did you see the lineup outside the passport office in Quebec? Just nuts.
They're all over the place. I got a buddy anecdotally who needed a passport. He's getting married on Friday, and they're trying to go on their honeymoon, I think, on Sunday. And his wife or fiance has been waiting for her passport for 6 months. She had to send in all the stuff, right? You have to send in your birth certificate and your old passport, all this stuff. So she's got none of her stuff, and she ended up driving like all around the Golden Horseshoe, I think last week, the end of last week, trying to find a passport. And the passport office said they sent it to her. Oh my God.
Don't they have a tracking number?
Yeah. Listen, I don't know how it turned out, but
I would assume
I'm sure I'll find out this week. Yeah. Len, you know, I don't have faith in anyone doing anything. So
all right. Whatever, man. Move on to the last story I have on the Canadian side is a story that Ethan Liu was covering, and it was a Hamilton youth that stole $48 million in cryptocurrency from an American investor. He received no jail time on Friday, but he was banned from using digital assets for a year. This gentleman is now 19 years old, and at the time when he performed this theft, he was 17. So this was done in 2020. And as a result, he can't be named under the Youth Criminal Justice Act. But he did admit in court of stealing $48 million worth of cryptocurrency from an American named Josh Jones. And he pleaded guilty to theft over $5,000. And in a joint submission between the Crown and the defense, he was sentenced to time served and a year probation. And his probation conditions include not accessing or possessing any cryptocurrency. This whole theft here was a result of a SIM swap attack. So I think we talked about this last year, this particular story, but here's the conclusion to it. But the fact that they're banning him from owning it or even participating in like buying Bitcoin for 1 year, this goes to show you that the court system just does not understand. If one wants to, you could easily go to a decentralized exchange. You'll never get known. There's no proof of identification. You could simply buy Bitcoin. There's ways to do it. So I feel bad in a way that it goes to show you that our laws and our court systems are just so antiquated, but that's the reality. They're passing off these judgments, and this 19-year-old can do the same thing moving forward and make another $48 million. So I hope he doesn't do it because somebody's going to lose out on that, but nothing's stopping him in reality. No law could stop him. He could just do it willy-nilly. And it's a Hamilton native too, so that's something close to home for you.
Steeltown, repping. Question for you. Is there not any other like tranche that this level of thievery falls in besides theft over 5,000? Isn't there a pretty big gap between 50 million and 5,000?
That's a good question. I think it has to do with the act itself, the Youth Criminal Justice Act. And there maybe that's the upper limit in terms of theft. I don't know. I'd have to look into it more in depth, but you're right. It's a massive jump. So he might as well have gone for 10 billion or 100 billion. Might as well try for Bezos' whole estate, right? Like, why stop at 48 million, right? Like, go for the gold, man. Go for the fucking gold.
God bless that kid. Great story. We do have to get Ethan back on the show. He was a good guest when we had him talking about Once Bitcoin Miner. And he's been writing and covering and doing a lot of, in my opinion, quality journalism in the space, which is, you know, pretty few and far between these days. So we got to get him back on. Highly recommend reading that story for people who haven't gone and looked at it yet. I don't know about you, Len. When I was 17, I was like barely finished like my Chromie stealing phase. This guy's heisting 50 million on SIM swaps. Like, that's really what's happened to our youth.
Kids are more sophisticated these days, and they have higher and more lofty goals. So good for them. Unfortunately, they don't drive well with the law. Anyways, that's it for the Canadian side. I got some rest of the news I want to talk about. And ProShares in the United States had the first Bitcoin ETF. It was a short Bitcoin ETF that was listed this past week. The ticker is BITI. So it's the same one in Canada. We have the same short Bitcoin ETF that's available here. The fact that they are approving, the SEC has approved a short Bitcoin ETF, but still we're waiting for a spot Bitcoin ETF. What's going on? We had some news this past week. I think it was even today. Gensler was saying that Bitcoin is indeed a commodity. So he's obviously on board the Bitcoin train. But why are they not able to approve an ETF, a spot Bitcoin ETF? The price is down. The price is really depressed. Is it really going to make a difference in the end? Now it's more about just getting there and just saying, yeah, we finally did it. Like, I don't think it's going to do anything in the end, but just why have a short ETF approved, but not a spot? It just makes me shake my head. I don't know what the fuck. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucking nuts.
It seems like we have, like, listen, I'm not saying we shouldn't put stories like this in the rundown, but we cover like, oh, there's another ETF, but still no spot ETF. When spot ETF? That's a story every week, every single Monday. It's the same.
But this
story
is a new precedent here that they approved a short ETF, right?
So what have we got now? We have the longs. We got the spots in Canada and Australia, a few other places. We got the short. Is there a 2X or 3X yet?
We have. I don't think we have either, but we do have a derivative based one that you could get a yield off BTCY, I think it is.
I don't remember that one. We definitely talked about that though.
We did. Sure. Yeah. So we got everything over here, and clearly, like, this is not the, like, United States, they proclaim themselves to be the, you know, home of capitalism. Well, come on, they can't even approve a simple fake. Spot Bitcoin ETF.
It's all fake. I'm not surprised. Hey, listen, let me know what Gensler's got in his ledger, and I'll tell you exactly why he hasn't approved the spot Bitcoin ETF once I know what he's got in his bags.
Probably not XRP, given how much they're going after.
It's XRP. I do think it's the other token, though. Token that shall not be named on this program. Unless we're talking about the cringe protesting and cringe synchronized dancing they do on stages for conferences. But I don't know if we have that this week.
No, they're doing the incels coming movement is coming out in August. ETH Toronto is going to be done in Toronto. We should go down.
We talked about how expensive gas is. I think I'll take a pass.
You're missing a fantastic opportunity. We could be communicating and discussing and questioning the people of that community. It would be awesome to hear what their thoughts are. There could be some NFTers in there too. So
a couple of good comments in the chat. TGEM, they finally approve a short ETF as Bitcoin hits a new low, so retail can FOMO in and get wrecked all the way up now too. That's a solid comment. I like that. Green Candle, Brandon's in the chat. Why even worry about a spot ETF now? There's no point in investing in it. I personally agree, but there's a lot of people who would use it because of the insane tax efficiency Canadians get. So Americans don't have the same, like, for all the things I think we've done wrong in the last, 5 years, 10 years, the TFSA is unmatched in terms of flexibility and tax efficiency anywhere in the modern world, as far as I know. It's really incredible. So I think a lot of people would want to get into a spot ETF in their TFSA.
See?
I know. There's a lot of people who want us to go down. Listen, if you guys want me to put on a unicorn onesie, you're going to have to pay real big money for it, because otherwise I ain't doing it.
You don't dress like an incel. You just dress like a normal person, and you.
I'll just wear this.
Yeah, whatever. I'll wear this unless it's warm, and I'll take this.
We can get Julian. If Julian Figueroa is around from Kinetic Finance, we'll bring him with us and make some.
We have some professional videographer there. That'd be awesome. Yeah. We could take it up a notch on the show.
We like Julian. You guys should check out his channel. Julian's a great guy. Mm-hmm.
Let's move on, Joey. And Janet Yellen, everybody's favorite, she told ABC this on this week, a federal gas tax holiday is worth considering to ease the burden of soaring gas prices. And Biden says he's also considering a federal gas tax holiday. Then this could save Americans as much as 18.4 cents a gallon. Remember, here in Canada, it's per liter. That's so every gallon is 3.875. I think that's the number of liters.
Yeah, it's so three and three quarters, I think, right? Yeah.
So in terms of that, it's not a big deal. So they're going to be taking off 18.4, which is good. I mean, I'm not trying to say this is shitty, but in the end, mathematics, somebody did some mathematics, and it would save the average consumer something along the lines of $20 to $40 for the duration of the summer. So it's not going to be something that's going to make them very wealthy, or it's going to make them save a heck of a lot of money. It will help them save a little bit, but it's not going to be a game changer. So by doing this, kudos to them for doing it, but really in the end, it's just like just throwing peanuts to the people. So interesting that they're going to be doing this, and also they'll be raking in less tax dollars, so that's going to be hindering their finances moving forward. So yeah, that's interesting news. Janet Yellen and Biden want a federal gas tax holiday.
Isn't this really like that meme that where like the guy is like asking for help in the water, he's drowning, and the guy reaches in to help him and cuts off his arm? Cuts off his arm and then gives him the arm, extends the cut off arm to help him out of the water. Isn't that what this is? Like they put the gas tax on you, then they give you the big gas tax back. To me, it's like whatever, it's a shell game. But the bigger question, if you get rid of the gas tax, how are you going to put it back on? Who's going to vote for the gas tax to make a reappearance on the invoice? Who's going to vote for that? Who's going to vote for it? No one. No one's going to vote for it. The states are getting rid of it too, apparently. Like it's not just the federal government's getting rid of it. The states are doing the same thing, or they're being told to do the same thing, or it's suggested they do the same thing. These things are going the way of the dodo. No one's going to vote for these things. So what's the plan here for the Greta faithful? I don't know. I don't know.
Let's see. Gonna be a lot less coming in.
Yeah, but that revenue, you know what that revenue is for?
It should theoretically be used for the roads, theoretically.
Road maintenance, exactly. And so I don't know about you, but one of the biggest stories in the States every election is how shit the infrastructure is anyway. So obviously they're not making enough to begin with. How much is the gas tax really helping them? It can't be that much.
Yeah, so that's why over here we pay a lot more. And in theory, the road should be better here. And there they have, in some areas, they have, you have to pay to use the toll roads, and those tolls should be used to pay to pave and maintain the roads. This is all just theory. Whatever works, works. I don't know. But either way, if they're going to be cutting back on taxes, that's going to be a lot of less revenue coming in. And we've experienced what happens with prolonged deficits. And here we are with a Canadian dollar and US dollar that is worth a heck of a lot less as a result. So maybe this is short-sighted thinking. I don't know. It's just my two cents. And moving on, did you hear there was some interesting information from Jerome Powell this past week? He said that even if inflation stays high as unemployment rises, he says that they would be reluctant to cut the interest rate.
How far has this guy come off the base that he was on a year ago? How far has he come off? He went from there's not going to be any inflation to even if inflation stays high and unemployment goes up, we're still not going to cut. We're still not going to slow down. This guy is in a different universe than he was a year ago. He can't even fucking see the field anymore from where this guy is.
He's using just this one metric, the unemployment, because the Federal Reserve has also said they are going to continually raise rates even if the U.S. goes into a recession.
He said this last week. He said this at the FOMC last week. He said everything he could say without saying it. They need higher unemployment for this to continue for them to try and help inflation. This guy, Len, I don't know, man. I don't want to say it, but it seems to me like they're really trying to engineer a recession, Len. That's how it seems. I know he says he's not, but the things he's doing and him and his conciliaries are constantly up to, I just don't see how he's not doing that.
He's a good guy.
Okay, sure.
Is he going to go down as the worst chair of the Fed?
Let's get him on the show.
Can we? Do we have that kind of clout? I'm wondering if we can.
We probably need more than 25 or 30 in the live stream to have a shot.
Hey, remember we were once rejected by a CEO of a Bitcoin miner? Remember that one time?
Should we talk about who?
I will never mention a name. Never
I remember will. That happening, and I remember us talking on the show. I think that we thought that guy thought we were too small. Well, yeah, look at us and now.
Jeff Booth coming on in next couple of
weeks. We have a major public company mining CEO coming on, I think in July, right?
We could say who it is. It's Hive.
Yeah, Hive's CEO.
Yeah, because I publicly tweeted that
he's coming on. Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about that after. We'll talk about the ups and downs of running a podcast after the show.
Well, screw that CEO that runs that company that mines shitcoins. And they mine shitcoins too, so you can figure out which one it is. So, but let's talk about Celsius, Joey. And you're going to probably want to pipe in on this one. Some really interesting stuff that's going on. So they've hired a reconstruction consultant from the advisory firm Alvarez and Marshall, and it's for the possibility of a bankruptcy filing. But we also had some really interesting developments. BlockFi signed a term sheet with FTX to secure $250 million loan. This is all DeFi stuff here, by the way. And this is going to help them with maintain their heads above water. FTX coming to the charge here, the white knight with the knight shining armor. And we also have Voyager. I'm not sure if you followed the Voyager situation, Joy, but Voyager has fucking took a kick to the teeth in the past week. One day went down 60-something%, and today was down another 15 to 20%. Just absolutely wrecked, and it's because of their association with Three Arrows Capital. Did I say that correctly this time? Three Arrows Capital? So apparently Three Arrows defaulted on their loan, and just today Voyager is now holding the bag, and unfortunately in the end. But so that's just the DeFi shit. And also Voyager has also dropped their daily limits to $10,000. So I'm not sure who has more than $10,000 on an exchange, but if you do on Voyager, unfortunately, you can't withdraw it all in one shot. But all in all, let's go back to BlockFi. We had something called the leaked document that came out this past Tuesday, and it shows that Morgan Creek Digital, they're attempting to collect $250 million from investors to acquire a controlling interest in BlockFi. And Morgan Creek, I'm just going to say this. Pompliano, there's a connection here. If you go look at BlockFi's website, Pomp Investments, and this is obviously associated with Pomp, they are one of the backers in BlockFi's D series. And Pompliano joined Morgan Creek when the company was investing in cryptocurrencies, crypto lender C-Series.
He's a partner. He's a partner, I think. Yeah.
So there's a huge connection here. And it seems rather suspicious that he's getting involved with Morgan Creek, which he is very much involved, that is going to be backing out a company that he was an active investor. Very interesting stuff. I'm not going to say what it is, what I truly think, because I'll get banned from YouTube, but there's that there's something going on here. There is smoke here. People, take a look what's going on here. There's somebody here that's a snake salesman, snake oil salesman. I don't want to say who it is, but somebody is peddling shit. And don't listen to him, because this guy, he talks bullshit. He pumps up garbage. He's trying to increase his own wealth at the expense of everybody else. This is fucking bullshit. Don't listen to him. This is an example. Look what's happening in BlockFi. It's a fucking travesty that people are going to be left with nothing in the end. It's fucking bullshit.
BlockFi is like really having a bad week or so here. Really bad. Zach Prince went on the Brink last week to talk to Matt Walsh about the current state of affairs there. I'll just say before I hop into this story, I'm so sick of these CEOs pretending that for legal reasons, they can't talk about whether or not their company's fucking solvent. That should tell you all you need to know, honestly, more times than not. Interesting thing about that pump, $250 million, the Sam Bankman-Fried / FTX 250 revolving credit thing, it apparently eliminated basically all of the shareholders in BlockFi and made Bankman-Fried and FTX the principal owner, I think, or principal partner in the company. I don't know exactly what the mechanism is for that, but I've seen that a few times, and people we trust, including SB from Oak Antidote, has kind of pointed that out, that like these, the terms of that kind of revolving credit, especially when the company's in a pinch, are never favorable to investors and never favorable to the company who needs the credit to survive. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see that. To your point, Pompliano is probably thinking about his investment in the company, Morgan Creek's investment in the company. And, you know, like we said last week or 2 weeks ago, I think when I was talking about it, and we were saying that like in a bear market, you see a couple of things. The biggest thing you see, though, is consolidation. You're going to see a lot of that. And this is already starting to happen in a major way. FTX also taking a shot at buying Robinhood today. Did you see that?
Yes.
Like, I don't know if that's a story, but if it is, we may as well transition to it now, because that's another great example. Sam Bankman-Fried is lining up ducks here big time. Bitcoin in the chat, taking scalps. Yeah, you could say that too. This guy's not fucking around. You know, like if you want to see what it's like to play in a pond where there's one shark and everyone else is kind of, like we said before, the product of a up only environment, you're going to see it. You're seeing it now, I would argue. And it's only going to get worse for a lot of these smaller companies. There's like more cracks in the system every day. It feels like there's another thread, another leaked DM, Compass. I don't know if you got Compass on the list, but like, there's another example of a company not paying its bills. Like, fuck, man, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. And I don't think it's going to get any better in the next little while.
Yeah. Let's talk about Compass and what's going on over there. It's rather interesting. I just got the notes here, and it's very, very brief. They had a hosting facility agreement with a company in Maine called, I think it's Dynamics UK. And that agreement fell by the wayside is because Compass failed to pay for power consumption charges. And is unfortunately, I think it's 6 payments that they were late, and there was 3 non-payments. So the Dynamics said, yeah, we're done with this. And they basically cut up the agreement, and people that had their miners over there, unfortunately, they're no longer able to mine because there's no energy to consume to power up the ASIC miners. It's rather interesting. We tried to get some more information today or yesterday. There was a space run by Compass, but from what I understand,
it was today, and it was like 10 minutes.
Yes, it was today.
And it was run by the kid, the blonde kid who does their YouTube stuff. Like, where the fuck is Whit Gibbs? Like, what the fuck is that guy doing? I know we had him on the show. We had him because we were starting to hear whispers from people who watch this show, messaging us, telling us there was problems with delivery, telling us there was problems with false bills of sale. And like, now you're seeing, right? Like, this is the other end of that messy. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So since then we had 3 closures. and I'm going to just use the Russian one as one big one. I think there's several mining facilities, but all of Russian servers. There was also, this is kind of falling under the radar. We don't talk about it too much, but the one in Quebec where they closed up shop and they had to, like, I think they're relocating to Ontario from what I understand. This was 2 months ago. Now you have this one in Maine. So there's a lot of, I don't know. I don't want to say if things are going really bad. I mean, I'll let people make their own decisions here, but it doesn't look all that great. But one thing to note, the spaces that was taking place today, it was 10 minutes, as Joey mentioned, they couldn't talk about it because it's in litigation. They can't talk about anything that until the court case is
complete. I don't buy that. I don't, because there's, like, you know what's not in litigation? All the problems you've had until now that seem to be culminating in you not being able to pay your bills. That, those guys at what is it, 2X Dynamics, something like that?
Dynamic 2K?
Whatever it is. They ran an all-night space. And
I heard,
and posted receipts and have, like, their Twitter feed has stuff on it. And Compass is saying we can't talk because of legal reasons. Well, what are they? We're all operating under different legal frameworks here. Are you right or are you wrong? Do you have receipts? Do you not have receipts? You're going to do a space with the kid who runs your YouTube channel, or are you going to do a space with your CEO all night long, taking all questions, not dodging anything? I know which one lends itself to believability. Common sense tells you which side is probably going to come out on top there, right? Am I dreaming that? Like, this, it's not that hard, man. And I'll say this too. Dennis Porter gets a lot of shit, and we give him some shit sometimes too because of that breaking stuff. But, you know, I talked to Dennis a bit when we did the Christmas panel on Ben's show. And I think that guy, he's a decent guy, man. And Compass and him have gone separate ways after they just invested a bunch of time and I would guess money into that breaking news thing that he was doing for them. So do you think that they can't afford Porter anymore, or that he doesn't want to be affiliated with them anymore? In either case, that's a canary in a coal mine. You're going to see a problem if either one of those things is true, because that's an ugly breakup and it's too quick for it to be shoved under the rug. Right. And Will took a question about that in that space today and dodged it. And all this stuff is just not good. And yes, that's right. Bitcoin, they deleted their Compass channel on Discord. And they said that it's because they wanted to serve people in a more formal way and like a proper queue and all that, but it's 100%. So they can't compare notes. You're absolutely right. This thing is going downhill, man. Again, fun time to be watching Bitcoin. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I think, Len, like, it's going to be hard not to take victory laps on some of this stuff over the next little while. That Wick Gibbs interview,
We were fair.
I think we were fair, but I think that was one of our most combative ones. That interview, I thought, could have gone either way after the first 15 minutes, because I thought we were hard on him in the first 15 minutes, and I never want that. Yeah, I never want that for the show. And in retrospect, you know, those are good questions that have obviously, I think, yet to be answered. So let's see. I don't know. You got anything else you want to say about that, or should we move on?
I got to watch the interview again. I had no idea.
I listened to a bit of it today because I tweeted it today or yesterday. I was saying, like, you know, this might be a good time to go back and listen to that because we had some questions about this stuff. And, you know, power procurement was one thing that we kept asking him about. How are you able to get cheap power? Why doesn't someone else just get it? Why doesn't one of the industrial miners get it? And I don't think he had a good answer. I'm not going to say that it was, you know, he was not telling the truth or whatever. I just don't think he had a good answer for it. And it seems to me that no one has a good answer for it. The procurement chops of an industrial miner, especially a publicly traded one, are always going to be better than a player like Compass. It's just the nature of the game. And I just think that he didn't really square the circle for me. And it seems to me he hasn't been able to do it since, you know, so let's see. I don't know.
Not your ASICs, not your machines.
That's right. I think it was Bitcoin in the chat said, if it's not hashing in your garage, it's not your hash.
Great. Joey, I think we talked about this before. I think you railed in it. The Russell 3000.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. So, the worst performing index of all time.
But you know, worst stocks. Core Scientific was added to it just today.
Oh, no.
So it's too bad. But anyways, a near record 128 members of the Russell 3000, and that's worth $281 billion collectively. They failed to turn a profit in any quarter for six straight years and almost tripled since 2017. It's absolutely nuts. So it goes to show you that it's cheap credit that's driving this thing. You don't have to show a profit. You just have to have an idea and be able to borrow and expand your business. And that's good enough to expand your operations. The Russell 3000, love it. Core Scientific got listed on it, but I hope that they actually make a profit one day and they're not part of this 128 members that are just leeching off the system here. Just sad stuff, but take a look at this. This is, as you call it, a canary in a coal mine, Russell 3000. This is the one to look at to see what's going on in the markets.
Are you still really vocally supporting Core Scientific as a great Bitcoin mining play? I would love for you to carry that bag the same way I carry the Coinbase cross. I think that we could probably both, you know?
I talked about it in the mining episode today. Core Scientific, I'm not sure how it's going to be, they'll be able to deal with this this bearish market because they're holding 100% of debt in comparison to other miners. Like Marathon is around 70%, Bitfarms is around 40%. So they're holding, Core Scientific, they're holding a large amount of debt. Now debt is getting much more difficult, much more costly to maintain and keep on the books. And also selling Bitcoin, which they recently did, you're selling at a relatively low price in comparison to what we had the last year and a half. So all signs are showing that things may not be looking good if the price of Bitcoin remains where it is right now. If the price of Bitcoin rips, they're laughing because they have the ability to stack a whole lot of Bitcoin in comparison to their peers, and they have a lot of Bitcoin on their balance sheet in comparison to their peers. But if Bitcoin remains low in terms of the price, it's going to be a really problematic moving forward, and you might watch this company get chopped up to bits. And who knows? They're the biggest ones now. Let's see if they maintain it. It all depends on how they could weather the storm.
I got a huge treat for you as a big mining guy in the Bitcoiner of the Week section. And that's all I'm going to say. I think you're really going to like it. I think people in the chat are really going to like it too.
Okay. And Joey, I have a couple of things I just want to finalize here. Sure. Coinbase, did you hear that they were
Why? Is it because I just poked fun at you? You didn't even have this on the list, probably. You probably just Googled this when I was going on a rant. Cool, here's another shitty Coinbase story. Let's plug it in. Joey gave me a hard time. Pile on. Down 90%. What's another shit story?
They're the whipping boy, as I called it in my
unreal
whining, but they were downgraded from a neutral to a sell by Goldman Sachs. Not only that, so, interestingly enough, in Netherlands, apparently this is Dutch regulation now, but this is going to tie into something else I want to talk about later. Starting June 27th, Coinbase, they introduces some changes because of local regulations. And when you send crypto outside of Coinbase, they ask you to name for the name and the physical address of the recipient of the purpose of transfer. So they're asking when it gets sent out, who it is it's going to and what is their address. And this is as a result of local regulations. This is something that's probably going to be coming into more countries than just the Netherlands. I'm not picking on Coinbase for this one in particular. They're just complying with local regulations. But this KYC stuff, it can get really, really problematic moving forward. They could ask for a lot more information. And why wouldn't they? If they have the ability to do it, they'll just institute it and they'll know a lot more information where the Bitcoin is, who owns it. And yeah, sad stuff.
It says more about Dutch regs than it does about Coinbase, but still, you know, kind of troubling. I think even here, like, there's going to be more of this kind of thing showing up over time. So, you know, like we talk about, we really got to be on top of the privacy heuristics. I think it's important for us more than it ever has been before. I am getting ready to dive into the cold card and going to take a look at some of the options that thing has for privacy and whatnot. Yeah, I know. Did you fire yours up yet? Do you have it, like, installed?
I plugged it in and everything. I have to
get an SD card. That's my next SD card.
It's not truly required, but it's recommended.
In Ben's tutorial, that's what he uses. So I ordered one. It should be here next week. Anyway, yeah. I mean, listen, man, start thinking about these things. Like Bitcoin in the chat says, KYC is bullshit. It's ramping up and you gotta get coins off exchanges 100%. So there you go. Be careful, man. Coming your way soon.
And that's it, Joey. Let's transition to the Bitcoiner of the Week and No Coiner of the Week, which is brought to us and brought to you by Tahini's. 13 locations, from what I understand, in Southern Ontario. Check it out. Sometimes you'll even see one of us at one of the Tahini's locations, copying some lunch or dinner over there.
I haven't been in a while. Have you been?
It's been almost 2 weeks since I've been to Tahini, or at least got something from Tahini's. My wife picked it up for me. And
I'm off work Wednesday and Thursday, and I can I can kind of envision myself going there for a shawarma.
The Hamilton location's nice. I mean, they're all nice. It's nice and cozy, that one. So, and it's conveniently located on Main Street. So yeah, check it out. Sponsored by Tahini's. Anyways, I'll go with my Bitcoiner, and then you can go with yours. Mine is going to be very simple. My Bitcoiner of the week. It's Oscar Mary from Fountain.
And oh, love my man Oscar. He emails out to people who are not using the app. And before you start, I got to say, he emailed me not knowing who I was. And I responded saying, man, I really have no excuse not to be using the app more. I host this show. He's like, oh yeah. Like, I think your co-host like has tweeted me a few times.
Yeah.
Like,
I've reached out to him.
We got to get him on. He's willing to come on sometime in the summer.
Pretty yeah. Cool. They did mention they do want to come on. They talked to me on Twitter some time ago, and we just have to arrange it. But yeah, Oscar Mary from Fountain. If you haven't yet checked out the Fountain app, what are you waiting for? Because if you just simply download it for your Apple phone or for your Android phone, you could use it as a replacement of your existing podcast apps. And with that, now with the new changes with Fountain, you could earn sats simply by listening to a show. Pick a show, listen to it. You're going to earn sats. How can you go wrong? Love it. Oscar Mary, you're my Bitcoiner of the week.
Dope. Great pick. Oscar, shout out to you, man. That listening for sats thing is amazing. Len, my Bitcoiner of the week is a guy named Jaron Mellerud. Have you heard of him before?
No. You said he was in a Bitcoin mining
game? He's about to be your favorite new guy. Let me show you something here. He put together a brief Twitter thread of which Bitcoin miner is in the best financial shape. So here we go.
DMG. I'm thinking that he's going to put
look at this. Direct Bitcoin production costs impact miners' operating cash flow and determines when a miner is forced to turn off machines, blah, blah,
it's
blah.
It's not showing on the screen yet. You're not sharing it.
What? Really? Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Okay, now.
We see it.
Good. Okay. I'm going to scroll. You tell me what you can see. So some really, really good stuff here. Many different metrics he uses to rank which miners he views as the most. I would use the word stable. He may choose a different word. I think he says the sort of winners and losers of the bear market. He uses cash flows and balance sheet to find out. Let me make it bigger. I'll make it bigger.
I'm curious to see who's on the top. Still hard. Yeah, there you go. Stronghold. Okay, there you go.
So public Bit miners farm. Direct Bitcoin production cost, which is pretty, pretty cool, man. Lots of good stuff here.
Stronghold, they took an absolute shit kicking in the past while, because they had 2 months ago they projected that they were going to be reaching a certain exahash per second. Then they revised that and it was much, much lower. And since then, their stock got absolutely wrecked.
So he said they mine it cheap.
Good for them.
Yeah. And Bitfarms and Hut 8 mine it for the most.
Well, not really the most out of this. I could show you miners that mine for even more than this.
Okay. I mean, those are not miners that you and I would, consider investing in, I think, right? I mean, maybe I'm speaking out of turn there, but he's got a number of other stuff here. Core Scientific has the highest current operating cash flows by a mile. How about that?
They have a lot of debt too. So yeah. They're going to need
that. Yeah. For sure. Anyway, so I won't prolong this. I'll share this this thread in the chat here so people can look at it. The long and short, Len, is that he determines after a great deal of research that the weakest miner right now is Marathon and the strongest is Argo blockchain.
Argo with their 1 gigawatt facility that's going to be going up in Helios. I hope I pronounced that correct. They're going to be just absolutely massive, and they're going to grow their hash rate so much in the next little while. Once that information was leaked or announced that they were going with that facility, it was going to ramp up to 1 gigawatts. Man, that fucking really put their stock, and they attached a rocket to its ass, and it went up so much in comparison to its peers. And yeah, look at all this disparaging remarks here. fucking true, man.
This is a problem. This is a problem with having too many people in the chat. Everyone's got something to say.
I am not defending Hut 8 and their ESG. Remember, I was talking about them. I think they talked about them on record on the Your Life, Your Terms podcast. What was that off the record?
We may have said, you've probably said it in the mining and equities update too, that they're going the wrong direction.
No, that was actually on the record. That was captured. I talked about it because that they're the people they're bringing on their board and so forth, they're looking at not their credentials, not their merits, but what they are in terms of, you know, I don't want to say it, but it's I don't buy it. I would rather look at the resume of somebody and base it, him or her, it, whatever the heck, what they've done, and essentially like the credentials that they have. And I wouldn't really go off anything
I'm
else.
I'm with you.
That's just me.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it. That's a wrap. We can go to the
I have a no-coiner.
Oh, great. Even better. Okay. Roll downhill. Yeah. What do you got?
No, I won't really go downhill. It's a double no-coiner again. And number one, it's Don Lee, and he's a writer for the LA Times. And he writes that, this is the title of his article. It says, yes, a recession looks inevitable, but it may not be that bad. Here's why. And the fact that he's here talking about that, recessions are normal for the economy. It happens, he's saying, every 6.5 years since 1945. I don't buy it. Like, the fact that it happens every 6 years and change doesn't mean it's good. It just means it's cyclical. Like, you know what else happens every 30 minutes in the United States? People get shot and murdered. I'm not going to say that's something that's good. It happens all the time. Now I'm going to say that's fucking bad, but that's just me. He's mentioning that many households are flush with cash and jobs are plentiful with demands for new workers, and is very strong right now for getting in new workers. Banks are well capitalized. We just talked about it earlier in the show.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? Like,
flush with cash. Who the fuck is flush with cash these days? People are bleeding their savings, their retirements. They're relying on credit cards more and more these days. And he's saying that, so COVID-19, since the downturn hit like a thunderbolt, everything has changed since we've reopened the economy and everything's running strong. But really, that it's fucking run hard, or it was running hard last year because of QE. Take that out of the equation, the economy would be sputtering. So this guy, truly, he has no idea what's going on. Don Lee, he's fucking trolling us with this article here. And that's why he's my no-coiner. He just does not understand what the fuck is going on in the world. But I also have a second one. Allison Schradler, I hope I pronounced her name correctly. It was a Bloomberg article and is written, inflation ate your free lunch, but you're still better off. And in her article is saying that we've lived a very high standard of living in the Western world for some time. And even with inflation taking away a lot or some of what we've been accustomed to, we're still way better off. And she's trying to spin it. It's a great thing, but it's not. It goes to show you that things are eroding. The economy is eroding. The trust in the financial system is eroding. It's not a good thing. This thing, it goes to show you that it's problematic. It's not going to stand on its own without continually infusing new cash. And as you do that, you debase the currency, you make it less valuable, and it spirals out of control. I don't give a shit how you spin it. There's inflation is not good. High inflation is fucking pathetic. We're still no better off in the end. We're far, far worse. And Allison Schradler, whatever the fuck her name is, she is also my no coiner of the week, part two.
Absolutely destroyed, like all our models. great. Good show. Price of Bitcoin. What is it? It's $20,762.
Yeah, you just look over here too. $26,779 in Canadian dollars. Who is that, Scoop, in the background?
My dog barking. Yeah, my wife is at home there. She's trying to calm him down.
All right. So, that's it. So, thank you very much for tuning in. And after show's coming up, it's going to be a good one because still lots of people to talk to here. We got a it's a pretty happening crowd. And if you're on the audio and you're not coming into the video stuff, the video chat room, like, what are you doing? It's so much fun really here. You're losing out. Like, this is, you know, great fun. Plus, you could ask us real time questions or make fun of us in real time. Either way, it's all good.
God bless you. Take care of yourself. Come over to YouTube for the rest. And we'll talk to you guys on Wednesday night. Mario Gibney, either 6 or 7. Thursday. We might do it Thursday night. Yeah, we might do it at 7. If we can swing 7, we'll do it the normal time.
Yeah. So if you have any questions for Mario, submit them, because especially now what's going on with the whole DeFi thing.
Yeah.
Not that Ledin is involved in DeFi, but at least we could put some rumors or questions to rest. And yeah, so submit your questions. And yeah, with that, take care.
Adios.